Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This podcast contains information, theories, and speculation based on the A Song of Ice and Fire novels by George R.R. Martin. It can and will spoil future episodes of the HBO television series Game of Thrones. This is your one and only spoiler warning. If you're looking for our non-spoiler podcast on Game of Thrones, please look in our feed archives for our Sunday night instant take and Tuesday afternoon full podcasts, or go to baldmove.com for our entire catalog. Hey everybody, welcome to the spoiler edition for the Game of Thrones baldmove.com coverage, officially unofficial, all that stuff. This is for 610, The Winds of Winter, which is, little lemon juice on the paper cut. That is, the title of the episode is the book that we're all, well, not all of us, but everybody, most people listening to this podcast have been waiting for. This is probably the last standalone spoiler edition we'll do. We might have a little spoiler edition at the tail end of next week, but I'm not too worried because we'll probably continue to do spoiler sections when we do the season one rewatch. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar with the way the rest of our podcasts work, most of the time we just do a straight up episode review and discussion. And then we have like a brief musical interlude and then we do a spoiler section afterwards. So we'll probably continue to do that. And if they're, you know, the nature of the spoiler section is kind of timeless. Mm-hmm. So if there's any hot takes that come out or something like that, we can discuss it. One thing I want to discuss is, as my wont, a lot of times I discuss at the end of the season wrap up differences between the books and the show. This year, much like last year, it's substantially different. And I started jotting things down. And I'm not sure exactly how to do it. For example, let's take in this episode alone. Grandmaester Pycelle is killed by Varys, who has returned from across the sea.
Kyber?
I know. But he's killed
in the books. He's killed by Varys. Okay.
And what happens is actually Kevin Lannister comes into his chambers of the Hand and notices that Grandmaester Pycelle has got his face in a book, which he assumes he's just fallen asleep. But you notice he's dead and he gets a crossbow right in the chest. And Varys essentially gives him the same speech that Qyburn does to Grandmaester Pycelle. Now, you think like, okay, well, that's not that big a deal. But, you know, it's Varys doing it. Varys is not down talking to Dorne. Varys, that's a pretty big change. And with results that I'm not... Varys accompanied with all of his little birds, which implies that the little birds are still loyal to him.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty big.
Yeah. Now that's a question. Who are they loyal to?
Right. And we got some feedback that we'll consider about maybe Qyburn and Varys working together somehow because of some of this stuff. Also, in Dorne, Prince Dorne's still alive. He's giving the fire and blood speech that Varys gives, and not the Lady Olenna. He's giving that to his daughter, who is upset that he's dragging his feet and doesn't seem like he is caring about vengeance or justice or any of those things. And he's like, no, 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 daughter, I've got this plan. We got a secret alliance with the Targaryens, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that that's a major change so much as that's the end result of a remix that has carried us far beyond kind of the book plot. Because, you know, a lot of people assume that, in the books, there's a pretend or perhaps legitimate Targaryen, Aegon, who is claiming to be Rhaegar's son. Instead of being murdered by the mountains, people say that they switcheroo'd on the babies. He was smuggled over to Essos and raised by this Targaryen loyalist named Jon Connington, who, by the way, is the one who sailed up the river with Tyrion, who is the one who got infected with Grayscale. None of that happened on Jorah.
The only one who can defeat Skynet.
Sure. Yeah, Jon Connington. You got to watch him. The machine's terrified of him. That's hugely different. In the books, this Quentin guy tries to free the dragons and gets burnt to a crisp. In the show, Tyrion frees the dragons and doesn't get burnt to a crisp. You'll recall that I was kind of shitting bricks about, you know, him maybe getting the Quentin treatment.
Yeah.
In the books, Cersei is just now getting introduced to the mountain, the resurrected mountain, and is, you know, looking forward to her trial by combat. She is not set the Sept of Baelor on fire, although she does burn the Tower of the Hand. After her father dies, she has that burnt to the ground just for kind of petty spite reasons. And she certainly is not made queen. Obviously, in the books, Jon is not resurrected yet. He's still bleeding out, laying dead on the floor. But also, Stannis is still alive, and he's still sieging Winterfell. That battle has yet to take place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, in the books, Brienne is sent on a mission by Lady Stoneheart to bring Jaime Lannister to her, and she meets up with Jaime and says that she's got to show him something, essentially, behind, you know, and they go riding off together. You know, that's a pretty big change. In the books, Arya is just, I think, is she still blinded? But she is yet to begin, you know, further training. None of the scenes where, like, she kills the old Kingsguard is there. Obviously, none of the stuff. There is a pre-release chapter from Winds of Winter called, with her point of view, called Mercy, where she kind of does something like that.
Okay.
But her endgame is nowhere to be found. In the books, you've got Euron Greyjoy, who becomes the king of the Iron Island, and he sends his brother Victarion over to send a marriage proposal to Dany. And the cornerstone of it is this dragon horn that he claims that he has gotten in his travels, and that it's called Dragonbinder, and it can mystically control dragons. Obviously, and Theon is still a prisoner. He's actually escaped with fake Arya, a girl named Jean Poole, who is pretending that the Boltons have tried to pass off as Arya to legitimize Ramsay's claim. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's
a lot of changes, yeah.
A lot of changes. And does that mean that the Dragonbinder is just bullshit? If so, why do we have Euron? I mean, why not just make, if the Euron thing is complete bullshit, why not just make Yara win the Queen's Moot or the King's Moot?
Right.
And then make her own damn treaty with Daenerys. Like, that's the one part I'm really struggling with. If the horn is not a thing, and I've had some people write in and say, well, that there's no evidence that the horn's not a thing.
Okay, but there's no evidence to say it is either.
Well, plus, just narrative sense, why wouldn't he mention that in his election speech?
Right.
Like, I'm going to get the queen with her dragon, with her dragons and my big cock and my big horn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, why, like, what's it going to look like if next season they have a naval battle or whatever and Dany starts to deploy dragons and he just whips out a horn that we've never heard of and blows it, and now the dragons are either repelled or they're subservient to him? Like, that's going to seem like it came out of nowhere. And I'm trying to think of how could they have a scene where he introduces the dragon horn to his inner circle again? Why wouldn't he just make that part of his campaign speech?
Sure.
Like, you know, if you've got a Star Wars program, you're going to be talking about it in your campaign speeches.
Right.
So it, the, you know, the way things have ended up here at the end of season six feels a lot like what I think they're going to be, like where events are going to be towards the end of, or the middle of, the Winds of Winter. But, man, it's hard to say, because Sansa's still with Littlefinger. They have been traveling from the Vale to, I forget where they're on en route to, but she's, you know, obviously going back and retaking Winterfell, and all that stuff is not on her radar, and she's not met up with Jon, and obviously wasn't a captive of Ramsay. It's some of these things a little bit harder to see where they're remixing from.
Like, Roose is is he still around in the book?
Bruce is still alive, yep.
Okay.
Yep. Also, there's the pie that had the phrase baked into it.
Right.
Was something that Lord Manderley, which was introduced this last episode, did as part of his, you know, this Grand Northern Conspiracy, the North Remembers.
Which really hasn't been touched on at all. I mean, then there's the Hound. Like, the Hound is still around.
They introduced him as, like, you know, in this monastic order, but they never mentioned him by name, and it's all just kind of a hint, and, you know, which is why Clegane Bowl became such a thing. But I don't know how you unpack all that stuff into an interesting way for the show watchers. Is it exercise in futility? Because I could flesh these ideas out and come out with an outline and present them over the course of 40, 45 minutes, but to what end? Because I can't talk about Dragonbinder, because if that does come around, it's a massive spoiler.
Sure.
But that's one of the things where, like, I would like to say that I think Dragonbinder's bullshit, and it's not going to be a relevant part of the plot, because if it was... And there again, I'm going through this kind of good faith assumption that the Double D's are trying to faithfully adapt their work. Did you see any of the behind the scenes coverage? Inside the Thrones or behind the Thrones?
I saw a little bit of it, yeah.
So the way that Dan and David were talking about this made it seem like Cersei burning the Great Sept and the way this all goes down was an original creation by them. Like, at this point, with the things that she has available to her, and knowing kind of the loose end game and her personality, this is the plan we think she would do. That was a little shocking to me, the idea that they would wing something that big and not have like a giant bullet point that says, you know, Cersei somehow.
Right.
And maybe that's a bullet point. Cersei somehow cows
Kills
King's
everyone.
Landing.
Yeah.
Or just like brings it under her heel.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I can think of a way to do it, but I just don't know. The previous seasons have been much, much more minor changes.
Of course, yeah.
And you know, it's also compounded by the fact that we're beyond the book, so some of this stuff, like, I don't even know their differences. It's just
right.
Like burning Shireen Baratheon seems like it'd be a pretty big deviation from the book, and yet Martin, I think, is owning that. You know, obviously the circumstances have to be different because Shireen's still at Castle Black and she didn't march with her father. I don't know. What do you think we should do as far as trying to outline the differences between book or show? Do you think we just
in this
just
podcast
did it?
Or in
no,
the
no,
full,
in the full in the, podcast
in the ones that the spoiler people are not. That are not spoilery.
Do you think there's any value when it's that big a difference?
I don't know. See, like, a lot of the times in previous seasons, it seems to me like it's been changes by omission. Like, oh, this thing didn't happen exactly how it happened in the books,
or,
and they haven't gotten into it yet.
This,
and
this
now
this plot
that
was carried out by three different people. We're going to streamline and make it one person.
Right, right. But now that, like, some of those things that they just omitted are kind of coming back around in weird ways, in different ways. Like you said, with this Dragonhorn, you just don't know if it's even going to be a spoiler.
Right.
So how do you talk about it in a non-spoiler podcast without people getting up in arms? I don't think you can.
Right.
I think stuff like that where it has not been mentioned in the show yet.
Yeah.
But it has been mentioned in the books. Maybe you omit from it stuff that has been mentioned in the show and is starting to get resolutions you can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you're at risk of giving spoilers.
The other big difference is in the books, Jaime is completely over Cersei. You know, he's learned of her many indiscretions and infidelities, and he's learned that she never loved him the way he loved her. At least that's his evidence. And he rejects her because she sends a last-minute plea before she gets the mountain to him to come save her because she's in trouble. And he completely dismisses it and doesn't really give a fuck. Also, the Blackfish survives in the book. He's able to swim out from under the portcullis and live to fight another day. The other big change is Lady Stoneheart is pulling the strings of the Brotherhood Without Banners. And a lot of people think that they're setting up a Red Wedding 2 that is going to end in the deaths of the Freys. Whereas that's already happened in this book.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it seems like the Grand Northern Conspiracy has been, which I think is a thing. There's too much evidence suggesting it. is just been boiled down to Lady Mormont giving a good speech and Arya slitting Walder Frey's throat.
Yeah, seems like it. I think with the Jaime stuff, we maybe give it until early next season to see how Cersei's actions shake out in their relationship.
Yeah.
Because if you start talking about, oh, in the books, you know, like, you might see the beginnings here of what happened in the books, which is Jaime hating
it's
Cersei.
Coloring people's expectations.
Right, and I feel like they might be starting that, but then again, they might not be, you know? It's not a given thing yet, so we can't really go into that. Lady Stoneheart, I still think, is completely off the table for non-spoiler stuff.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I think she's kind of off the table as far as existence in the show. If anything, I'm trying to think, like, where... So, Brienne and Pod are rowing, presumably north, to rejoin her lady.
Yeah.
And it seems that maybe Arya could join up with the Band of Brotherhood and be their Lady Stoneheart. Like a plus version of Lady Stone, or one that can speak and transform faces.
Yeah. Could she take on the face of Catelyn? Could she
that would be
look
interesting.
Like Catelyn?
I don't know. Because, you know, damn it, we just don't know enough about the Faceless Man's magic.
Right.
That's one of my laments for the previous episodes, is we never learned. You know, I it's like it's kind of prophetic. We said we don't know enough about the way the Faceless Men's face magic works to definitively say what you need and if Arya can make her own faces or if Arya has to steal a face from the wall. We just don't know about all that process, but we wouldn't be surprised if she does use a face and we'll just have to roll with it. And by God, that's exactly what. She shows up with a face we've never seen before. Did she arrive early and murder a Frey girl?
It gives us no more information, right?
No, like, we just accept the fact that she got a face somehow. Maybe she took it across the Narrow Sea. Maybe she showed up early and murdered a Frey girl.
Right.
Or maybe she just conjured out of thin fucking air. You don't know. You know that there are real faces involved in some aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or else, why are they curing all these faces and flaying them off of dead people? But I have no fucking clue how that stuff works in any kind of physical or metaphysical sense. The other big thing, a lot of people wrote in and said that Qyburn is definitely wearing the hand of the queen.
Yeah, I saw a few of those.
Yeah, so we definitely were, just didn't notice that. Arthur L. touches on another big, like, the only really unresolved plot from the books that has yet to be unveiled. And he says, in Instant Take, you briefly referenced a few pages of books that we haven't seen on the show yet, i.e. the mysteries in Old Town and at the Citadel. Would love to hear you guys go into more info on that. In A Feast for Crows, Archmaester Marwyn at the Citadel tells Sam, who do you think killed all the dragons the last time around? Galliant dragon slayers armed with swords? The world the Citadel is building has no place for it in secrecy or prophecy, or sorcery or prophecy, much less for dragons. It sounds to me like the maesters have tools or weapons that threaten Daenerys' dragons when she arrives. Is there a secret maester movement controlling events from the shadows? Will we see one or more dragons go down at the hands of the maesters in the next season? Does their worldview mean for now, what does their worldview mean for how they'll respond to the White Walkers?
I thought the dragons were killed by neglect, essentially.
Well,
and
so
captivation.
But they also, so that's one theory. That's like that the
that's just a theory. Okay, I thought that was a fact.
Well,
that the Targaryens just didn't care for their dragons the way.
So
they should've.
The Targaryens were, you know, as they had more and more dragons, and you know their family got larger and more successful, they started doing things like, you know, we need a roost for them, so they built like this massive enclosure, to dragon dome, and you know, enclosed them in there. And Tyrion's parroting the conventional wisdom that if you chain a dragon in captivity, they don't thrive as well. But that's a supposition. Another theory is that the maesters have been working together to poison the dragons, which is why they progressively got more and more stunted and choked off. Or maybe the maesters were telling the Targaryens, hey, you need to build a dragon pen and you need to keep them safe and secret and locked up.
Right.
Because what if, you know, it's your big weapon and you need... Like, there's a lot of ways they could manipulate that and actively suppress the proper care and feeding of dragons so that, you know, it's like they could poison or by steering and influencing the Targaryens. Because that's one of the things. The maesters have an incredible amount of power because they have a voice in every lord's ear throughout the Seven Kingdoms. And not, I mean, right. like anyone that has a castle essentially has a maester that's issued to them. Mm-hmm. And the Grand Maester, you know, obviously is advising the king himself and sits on the small council. So what does this mean? And there's a lot of other stuff going on at a citadel, for example.
Hold on. Before we leave that,
yep.
I wanted to ask you, what is, I guess, which of those theories has the most supporting evidence? Are you aware of, like,
I would say that the plain reading of the text suggests that the Targaryens neglected their dragons. If
okay.
you read between the lines and consider what this Maester Marwyn says, who is kind of a like a mad mage type of character, like he's all about the Valyrian Lynx and is, you know, he's all about studying okay. magic.
He's a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, and there's like this. So there's a lot of interesting things about the way you become a Maester. Like you study, you as soon as you're taken in, you're called an acolyte, and you study. And every time you master a discipline, you forge a link in this collar that you
right.
wear. And after a sufficient number of those masteries are developed, you get a, you become a full scale maester and then are assigned to your duties. Mm-hmm. But before you do that, an acolyte has to spend like 24 hours locked in a pitch black room with this thing called a glass candle.
Okay,
which there's some kind of magical candle that there's some sort of magic that you can light them or that they will glow that has been lost to the maesters. So essentially just sit in this pitch black room with, unless you can manage to light it. I think this Maester Marwyn might, when we first meet him, he's sitting in front of a lit glass candle. And so there's like all this like implies that he's got this mastery of this hocus pocus stuff. Also there's a lot of evidence that I believe that he's the one that taught like the witch that cursed Dany and Drogo, like she credits him for teaching her about medicine and witchcraft and all that stuff. So he's got some okay. practical. And as soon as he finds out that there's dragons in the world, he's like takes off to go find them.
He's like me in 1997 looking for the weirdest shit on the internet I can find.
Yeah, he's on Snopes.com, and he's on all those places. Something awful.
Mark my words, Sam lights that candle.
Probably.
Sam's the man. Sam
and
comes
what is
in.
That? What is that? What do those glass candles actually do?
Right.
Or are they just kind of a neat little magical bauble in the world? I don't know. They're like the training wheels for magic.
Okay.
The other interesting thing about the Citadel is there's a lot of evidence that Jack and Hagar is hanging around there, and he's assassinating people.
Yeah.
Because the face that Arya sees when he fucks off at the end of the second, you know, after her adventures in Harrenhal, which in the books, Tywin is replaced by Roose Bolton. She's serving Roose Bolton. And in the show, of course, she serves Tywin. But the face that he takes is very similar to this character introduced as the alchemist who murders a young boy in the Citadel. So he's off doing something.
Hmm.
Also, there's a very popular fan theory that the Sand Snake Sirella is in the Citadel, and she's disguised as a boy acolyte named Aurelius, which is Sirella spelled backwards. And their physical descriptions match like what she would look like if she was going in drag.
So is that what the little boy... You look like an angry little boy comment was about last
episode. Well, so that's
this episode.
That was Obara, not Sirella.
Right, different girl,
it could be a wink.
Right.
Now, it could be that's just another layer of unnecessary complication onto a plot, which surely is essentially the story of how Sam unlocks through his learning and scholarship
right.
the key to defeating the others.
Or at least part of that key.
Part of the key,
he's
yeah.
He's one piece of the Voltron...
That comes
that's
together.
Come together to stop the White Walkers.
And that this other stuff is just Martin intrigue layered on top of it. But, you know, now that the Sand Snakes kind of have a purpose in that they're, you know, fighting for Dorne or whatever, maybe we will see one of them. That's the other thing is, like, every time you've had the option to make someone be in a disguise, and barring the Faceless Men who can just seamlessly wear a different face... in the books, that happens a lot. There's a lot of characters going under disguise. In the show, they've never, ever done that.
Right, because it's more difficult.
It's just hard to do. Like, you know, I speculated how maybe they could do the reveal of the Hound, where he's just some tall dude digging a grave, and he turns and faces the camera, and you can see, you know, he's maybe has a scarf over his face, but you can tell, like, that's the Hound.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even do that. It's like, nope, this is the fucking Hound. Let's not pussyfoot about it. So it'd be strange if they did do one of those you know, dress up games, and to what end?
Yeah.
But that's kind of the big thing. You know, what is Sam doing at the Citadel? Is Sam going to be able to have time to even become a maester by the time it is going to matter? Those are things that are kind of like on the table of open questions going into next season that are from the books. Mm-hmm. What's going on at the Horn? What's going on that Euron supposedly has? Does it exist? And what's going on at the Citadel and with Sam's education?
Yeah.
So.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time to pay the bills once again. The primary way we pay our bills is by our club at club.baldmove.com. It is fairly inexpensive. It helps keep our lights on. It helps produce independent content. If you want 3 Game of Thrones podcasts and you want to keep them coming, best way to do that is to go to club.baldmove.com and support us. You also get stuff in return. It's not just a give, take, or take, take, take. It's a give, too. You get ad-free feeds, VIP access to the forums, special exclusive club member content. We do stuff every week that's just for the club members. Special podcast performances and video podcast performances and fan interactions. Next week, Battles of Westeros, Jim mm-hmm. versus Aaron, no holds barred, all dice rolled. Got that. You can also, if you don't want to sign up to any kind of monthly or yearly obligation, there's the Amazon link at amazon.baldmove.com. Follow that link. Anything you buy on that cart, we get a teeny tiny cut of. And as we mentioned in the main cast, we got House Snow, We Know Nothing, custom Bald Move t-shirt you can get in on as a pre-order. It's going to be 4 to 6 weeks in the making, but we're printing that on premium t-shirts. Give a look at our shop, baldmove.com/shop, if you want to check that out. Another way to support us. We try to make it easy. We don't ask for much, just a continued existence. we just want, you know, to be the what would be a good example, the Jorah, you know.
Okay.
We don't need to marry you. We don't need to be your hand. We don't need to be your maester. We just want to wander the wilderness with our grayscale.
Okay, I'd prefer to be Dario.
The Dario,
like, yeah, I mean, maybe
left the rule behind him. We're not that good. Come
they've
on,
they've both been rebuffed, but one of them's dying, like, actively.
Okay, fine. We'll be the Dario. We'll be the Dario to your the Queen Daenerys.
I feel good about that.
Club.baldmove.com. Let us get into some more feedback. Then we already considered Arthur's take on the Maesters and the Citadel. Kaylee E. says, what if the three heads of the dragon theory is more metaphorical than we thought? Instead of having 3 literal dragon riders, it's representative of the 3 rulers of Westeros. Jon Snow as king of the north, Asha or Yara Greyjoy as the queen of the Iron Islands, and Daenerys Targaryen, queen of the south. The dragons being Westeros and the three heads being the 3 rulers.
Then what about the middle? What about the belt?
The belt?
Yeah, the peanuts.
Well, traditionally the Iron Islands and the Riverlands are kind of one and the same.
Oh, really?
They're okay. The same administrative district.
So like all that King's Landing stuff, that would all fall under the Iron Islands?
Well, no. King's Landing would be... So King's Landing on south would be Dany. The middle part, the belt you refer to, is the Riverlands.
What about Dorne?
She'd get Dorne. Of course she would.
Jesus, that seems like a lot.
She'd get the bottom half of... For the fucking queen?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Yara's getting the shit into the stick here. Like,
well, sure.
You get this crappy set of islands. Like...
And the Riverlands. The Riverlands are pretty vast holding. Historically, that's how it worked. You know, the Iron Islands controlled the Riverlands and ruled through Harrenhal until they got...
I guess my big hang-up is I don't see any reason to replace or get rid of Alara down in Dorne.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't hate Danny. And well, and Dorne is not part of, you know, sure, whatever kind of rebellion there might be against Danny. I wouldn't think.
I think that's the interesting thing about what Tyrion and Danny were saying about, like, if people, you know, you let this person have their sovereignty, then what's stopping? Like, are you going to really, what are you going to be, like, the super queen of seven kingdoms now? Or, right, you know, because if you let them have their independence, then what the fuck? Now, why are when the Starks ask for theirs, are you going to deny it? When the Tyrells ask for theirs, are you going to deny it? Although the Tyrells seem like they're finished. More on that here in a bit.
But the Martells certainly aren't. And, like, well, aren't they? The Sands,
have,
I guess.
They have bastard children.
Right, right.
With, like, no one to legitimize them.
Alara's on the throne there,
yeah,
for what it's worth.
Sure.
And she's got Dany's backing. She's part of Dany's fleet. Like, why the fuck would Dany banish her from the south and take that part over?
Yeah.
I don't know that there would only be three heads, I guess. Unless you want to cut Yara out, which...
Yeah.
That doesn't seem likely
that seems
either.
Another
she
way.
Just brought
she's
all the
screwing
ships to her.
Someone over no matter what she does.
Cut John out. John, you're gone.
Kaylee continues, it's not out of the question to have John be a dragon rider, as the Tower of Joy scene at the end of last episode proved that he is a Targaryen, but I really can't see a third plausible dragon rider. I mean, it would be really amazing if it was Tyrion, but I feel like him being a secret Targaryen cheapens the relationship between him and Tywin, and personally, I don't go for that theory.
I don't either. But I do think he's going to ride a dragon.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be a Targaryen to ride a dragon. Just because Targaryens are associated with dragons, like, I mean, I don't know. The show maybe has left it open that there is some kind of special psychic connection between a Targaryen and their rider. But that seems silly. It seems like anyone with sufficient... Unless Tyrion's a secret Targaryen because the dragon showed kind of that natural affinity for him, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the theory. I like Tyrion as a secret Targaryen. And if you've gone into the spoiler archive and heard the Tyrion as a secret Targaryen, there's a surprising amount of textual evidence for that as well. So I think at least in the show, the Three Heads of the Dragon will be three rulers of Westeros. As cool as other people riding dragons would be, I think they've blocked themselves from that by giving Dany a connection to all three dragons. Because, again, okay, she has
so
a telepathic connection.
Yep.
How would someone else ride them? The other thing that I don't know we've talked about this season is there is a pretty old theory about Bran being a dragon rider.
Mm.
Because obviously he could warg into one of them.
Right.
Which would also, like, that's something that's a little bit in the show, because the old Saruman, the Dingy version of the three-eyed raven told Bran that he'd be able to fly by the time he completed his training.
Yeah, no, I do remember we were questioning, you know, how intelligent are dragons and can they be warged into, but, you know, are they more intelligent than humans?
You can warg back in time into a fully functional teenage human boy, so...
Right.
I think dragons are surely no more intelligent than Hodor.
But
we've
argued about that. I mean, or not argued about it, but like
are they
discussed
superhumanly
it.
Intelligent?
Right. That's something we've wondered aloud on the podcast before, and
what
I don't know
the
answer
like,
to it.
What would superhumanly intelligent dragon that can't like that doesn't have like a?
I mean, I would think it would look like the extinction of humanity. I don't know why. I don't know why they'd keep us around.
If only we had opposable thumbs. Right. We just have these flamethrowers. Yeah. You're right. You'd think so. Also, they are the Viserion and who's the other brother? Rhaegal? Are they stupid dragons that they can't figure out how to get out of a chain or ambush anybody or do work together? Like, hey, you belch fire at my iron chains until they're weak and then we'll take turns.
Yeah.
Are they immune to each other's fire?
I don't know. Friendly fire is turned off.
I don't either, because, you know, they've said they're flames made flesh, so I don't know if that's literally true.
Dany is immune to their fire, I can tell you that much.
Show Dany does seem to be immune to her fire, which is another difference from the books to the show, or unless Martin's been lying to us all. TJ from New York says, is it possible that Qyburn is an agent for Varys? Book evidence. In the books, Varys is the one to kill Kevin and Pycelle, so they can't keep stability in King's Landing. That and more is accomplished in the show by blowing up the Sept of Baelor. The High Sparrow is as much as a threat to Varys' plans as the stabilizing influence of Kevin, since the Faith Militant has rallied support of the people behind King Tommen. Now the people will flock to a leader promising to free them from Cersei's tyranny. Question about the books. Is Book Pycelle any more competent than in the show? If not, I'm not sure why Varys would want him dead, but we can explain this if Qyburn is his agent, since Pycelle is squarely opposed to Qyburn because he is a failed maester. I don't think the book Picel is any more competent. I always took that as Picel was up in Kevin's chambers waiting for a audience, and Varys, you know, couldn't have, you know, just killed him as a matter of expediency. And yeah. Also, compared to the other idiots that Cersei has put on, you know, the small council, like, Picel's better than some of them, you know. There's a plot where I think she turned the Navy over to this bastard, this dashing bastard, and I think he made off with every one of her ships. That's, like, one of those very low-key plot points. But, like, literally everything that Cersei does in the books is a goddamn disaster.
Yeah.
In the show evidence... show evidence. Qyburn fairly easily turns Varys' network of little birds. I find it unlikely that Varys would not go to great lengths to maintain his spy network after leaving King's Landing, since he will need to know what's going on in the Westerosi capital to be of greatest use to Daenerys, and we know that he has the ability to run spy networks in hostile foreign cities. Why would Qyburn work for Varys? All I know about the man is that he loves his science experiments and his pursuit of forbidden knowledge. Whatever regime will allow him to continue this is the best one for him. Yes, Cersei has made him hand to the queen, but I haven't seen Qyburn as someone who particularly cares about holding titles or political power. To turn Qyburn, Varys would have to convince him that Cersei's days were numbered and that Daenerys would be bringing a new order to Westeros that won't be afraid to break with tradition and put them in charge of the Maesters.
So I guess my first question there would be, when did Qyburn become an agent? When would you speculate that he became an agent of Varys?
That's a good point, because both in the books and the show, he was kind of hanging around. In the books, he was associated with the Brave Companions, which was this marauding band of marauders, the ones that cut Jaime's hand off in the book. And then he came into service of Roose Bolton at Harrenhal. Then he healed Jaime's hand, and that's how he just, that's pretty much from there on the book is and the show kind of one. Well, so you're right. That's a long fucking con.
And also I think there's some evidence that says maybe Qyburn isn't, and that's Robert the Strong, I think, or Sir Robert Strong, mm-hmm. whatever his fucking name is, the Mountain.
They just call him Sir Gregor, and I mean, they just don't even fucking...
In the show, right, he's just Gregor.
Yet again, not even a hint of trying to hide any kind of identity here.
Right. So the line I'm taking with that is having Gregor there resurrected would actually help Cersei out quite a bit and help to stabilize King's Landing a little bit more than you might hypothesize Varys would want. So is Qyburn working with him from the start, or is he working with him later on?
I think that's a pretty astute question, because to me that probably explodes the theory. Now, it's not like it's unprecedented for the Double D's to just make something happen because they need to make it happen, even though it doesn't necessarily track clean from the beginning. And you know, who knows, maybe Varys did have this guy waiting in the wings and he wheeled his way toward, but like if not for Jaime getting being captured and have his hand cut off, how the hell does he ever get into the court of King's Landing? I mean, he feels very much like a high sparrow or even a little finger who is just keeps like, oh, there's an instance to pursue my interests. And I do agree with TJ here that Qyburn doesn't feel like he's motivated by power. It's more he has just wants to be able to do his studies and his weird witchcraft science, his alchemy bullshit, and whatever lets him do that in peace is something he's for.
And I also agree with the sentiment that Varys would not be quick to let go of his spy network.
Sure.
And his little birds there. So I can see where he's coming from for sure. I'm not 100% that it lines up.
I do like the theory that the little birds are all essentially double agents for Varys.
Yeah.
And Qyburn doesn't even know that.
And that they sent out a raven, hey, Qyburn wants us to do this thing. Is that cool?
Or maybe could Varys school the children to give information to Qyburn to make him want to? I think Qyburn wanted to take the Maester out anyway. To be nudged in that direction. So that really doesn't say one thing or another about the kids. But yeah, that always struck me as fishy that Varys just would relinquish his spy network. And certainly that's not the case in the books. Arnell A. said, this may be a bit of dry pie, but is there any chance that Jon is not a Targaryen at this point? The dark hair, skilled swordsman.
0%, and I can tell you why.
Why?
HBO released an infographic with all of the parental connections to a bunch of different characters. Jon was one of them. They've got a line from Rhaegar. They've got a line from Lyanna. She is his mother. Rhaegar is his father.
Yeah.
End of story.
So he is going to go into the Sir Arthur Dane, some alternate parentages from Jon. I was going to mention that exact same thing, that either HBO is lying to us with not just what they portray. I mean, because it's one thing to misdirect, because they did they did drop his name, like, you know, to a whisper so we couldn't hear it. So there's still room for some maneuvering. But if you're going to do that, why come out with something extracurricular that confirms the data?
Yeah.
That, to me, would be not even a lying. That's not a, that goes beyond lying by omission. That's just lying.
Yeah, straight up.
And I don't like that. So yeah, we can let that be the quote-unquote last word.
Okay.
And again, that's the thing. Like, I've
seen... How do you feel about that? Like, are you satisfied by that after a decade or more of wondering and, like, theorizing by R plus L equals J? Like,
yeah.
Is that something that you were hoping would happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, what a cool theory. But then the more, because, you know, there was a smattering of evidence in the first three books, but it just keeps kind of piling on, and like the extra material, and you find out information even about, you know, the tourney at Harrenhal and how things went down between Rhaegar and Lyanna, because, you know, Martin's makes these extra books, and, you know, the World of Ice and Fire, like, it seems like it's more and more solid, and people continually found, like, more and more hints that it would have felt dumb had it not worked out that way. So yes.
Okay.
And I thought the way they actually did the reveal with the swelling music and the cut from the baby to John, I thought was really effective. I felt very, very satisfied with the way that paid off.
Okay.
Now, I noticed that Preston Jacobs has not been happy with this season. Yep. He's the one that is like promulgator of most of the alternative genealogies for John.
Right.
And to me, his criticism comes as a bit of sour grapes, which is not quite the analogy. That doesn't quite work, I don't think. But it seems like, I mean, I always thought that he was a bullshitter, spinning some bullshit. And I didn't bear him any ill will, because they were inventive and they made sense from a certain point of view. And also, there hadn't been a book for 5 years, so what else? You know, you got most of the oxygen has been sucked out of the room. But it does feel like it's more... does he honestly think the Double D's are just going rogue?
Is that what he's...
He's dissatisfied because these things that are being confirmed are not as grandiose as his ideas. And you're coming, I think he's coming dangerously close for saying, essentially, I'm a better writer than George R. R. Martin. Like, my jigsaw puzzle and my collage that I've cut and, you know, and my ransom note that I've cut and pasted from all these magazines is better than the source material. Mm-hmm. And I disagree. And that's the thing, but then again, I would, because, like, I went on record last year in one of the spoiler podcasts just essentially saying, boy, I was really excited about this as being an alternate theory, and then I looked into it, and it just doesn't really have a leg to stand on. But
yeah,
if you're a Preston Jacobs, you know, acolyte, and you're trying to forge your links and stand before his glass candle, you know, I got a couple of feedbacks from people that were kind of along those lines. That they were. It's funny because one of them accused me of, like, being a Double D supporter because I wasn't talking about these things, and I'm like, no, I don't talk about these things because I did talk about them and I think they were rubbish. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me that the actual unveiling of the truth that I've accepted as kind of like, you know, gospel for all these years lines up with what these popular theories are and not the Preston Jacobs alternate theory.
Yeah.
Like, I thought those were long shots at best. But, you know, anyway, if you were hoping that one of those was cooler, like, you know, that Mira and John were brother and sister, or like any of those other theories, then maybe you're disappointed. Anyway, let's see. Did I already go through here? So we already dismissed the Arthur Dayne theory. Marky said, what I'm looking forward to in season 7 and 8. I have to imagine that one of the major plot lines going forward is there will be confrontations and negotiations between Dany's crew and the Starks. The key figure here will likely be Tyrion. While Dany views Ned Stark as the villain, Tyrion had a pretty good, albeit short-lived, relationship with the Stark kids. Well, the boys, anyway. Jon and Bran are the kind of his bros because they have all dealt with societal scorn for their perceived shortcomings, and, well, let's just say, between him and Sansa, he is not the one who is entitled to feel aggrieved. Tyrion and the Starks were all victims of his family's machinations. Now that he is truly a trusted advisor of Dany, he would have the capital to convince her to ally with the Starks, not to fight them. And he can hope, or we can hope, that he gives some classic lines like, "Your Grace, why would you even want the North in your kingdom? All they have there is Northmen." Regardless of the specifics, this seems pretty clearly part of the plot going forward. And what's great is that it will all be in the execution, no crazy plot twists needed. Some of the best scenes Game of Thrones have ever done were with Dinklage talking to people and being smart. And finally, in episode 9 and 10, he dropped the eunuch jokes and got back to being smart. And that's all I'm looking forward to in the seasons to come. I do look forward to him kind of smoothing over the bitterness between potentially the Starks and the Targaryens. Also, the fact that nominally him and Sansa are still husband and wife. I don't know that that's true because they didn't consummate their marriage, and right. Ramsay graphically did.
Sure.
So, but if you were to ask Sansa what you thought of Tyrion, do you think she's got a positive or negative view of him?
I think in light of recent events, she probably has a more positive view now than she did.
Right. I mean, he never treated her with anything but respect.
No, absolutely.
And was clearly being forced to do this and is humiliated along the way.
I think it depends on how much of a grudge she's holding against the Lannisters in general.
She would be forgiven for being a blind big grudge. Sure.
But if she actually looks at it rationally, I think Tyrion has been one of the nicest people to her, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Now, whether she says, well, he's all right for a Lannister, or whether, you know, just judging by all the people I've met, he's a decent human being, that's a good question.
And it's also interesting. What are Jon and Dany now? Are they cousins? Are they?
Dany is his aunt, because that's Rhaegar's brother. Okay. So she's Rhaegar's sister. Rhaegar is Jon's dad. So that would make them,
So if they have the ability to prove that, I guess, to Dany, that might soften her view of Jon, of those Starks quite a bit.
And that's a big if. Like, it's an almost certain if, but it's because if no one besides Bran knows and Bran never is able to communicate that, then it's like a... I don't even know what you would call that. Like a private joke for the listener or for the reader?
I guess.
Like this kind of irony that, like, all this stuff is happening and it's amongst the relatives and...
Yeah, I think you call it wasted screen time, with the Tower of Joy.
Well, that's interesting because someone wrote in, or maybe I read this on Reddit, but, like, the irony of the Tower of Joy is it becomes clear now that the Kingsguard were there to guard Rhaegar's son from Robert Baratheon's wrath, if he finds out. So, like, if they'd have just been like, hey, we're guarding Rhaegar's son, and Ned's like, oh, well, I can help you with that, like, maybe no one dies.
Right.
But that's not how things went down.
Nope.
Because in the end, Ned was just as committed to saving him from the wrath of Robert. And there's a lot of cool things that make sense. Like, why was Ned so outraged by the idea that Robert would hunt down Daenerys and kill her? Like, I gotta feel like a part of that is because of all the sacrifices he made to keep Jon safe. And Robert killing another child is somehow cheapening that. Or, like, Ned takes it personal because that's his greatest fear, that Robert would find out and want to execute Jon. There's a lot of stuff that makes a lot of sense in hindsight. Now, you know, obviously Ned's a good guy. I don't think he would advocate for the murder of... quote-unquote children, anyway, but... William B. says, I have a little theory here about Euron Greyjoy and his plans. Seems to me that many people just expect Dany, Yara, and company to destroy Euron and his fleet easily with dragons, which in practice has been admittedly easy for Dany so far. Although I would like to focus on some words Euron said to Balon before he killed him. He said something like, "Brother, I am the drowned god, the first storm and the last, and people pray when they see me. Could Euron have another key component in his plan? I think he might have harnessed the power to control his sigil. Yes, a kraken. I don't see Dany making it through the series with all three dragons, so this would be an avenue to possibly slow down a seemingly unbeatable Dany team. What do you think? Do you think he's going to have a squid horn that he summons Godzilla cartoon style from the depths, a kraken, who's just going to pull a dragon underwater?
Why not? That'd be a pretty awesome visual.
It would be, but there again, you've got the same kind of like, it's even worse than a dragon horn because,
We didn't know that krakens even existed, let alone there were horns to control them.
I mean, in the books, you've got the bones of Naga and the fact that they've got this ancient sea monster that they worshipped as a god, and and like that's part of their history, but that's still not like a kraken.
Yeah.
So I essentially, all the problems I had with the dragon horn multiply by the fact that we've seen no kind of sea monster hint at all in the show, and then you got that. Would be a cool imagery, cool image, though.
Yeah.
Christian, in your last podcast, a listener wrote in and remarked that the old lineages are about to die out, and Aaron mused if this could strengthen his theory of a parliamentary monarchy system. I disagree with the possible extinction of the old lineages, because one could easily paint a future of Westeros in which these lineages play a certain role. And at this point, Christian, you and I will be locked in debate.
All right.
Before Aegon conquered 6 of the 7 kingdoms and ruled as one king over them all, there were, well, 7 different kingdoms. After defeating the White Walkers and reinstating the 7 independent kingdoms is a valid option, especially when all the remaining forces from the south, after Dany disposes of Cersei, join the forces in the north to fight the White Walkers together. To defeat the White Walkers, all houses must join their forces and work together. So maybe the idea of cooperation endures after the battle against the White Walkers. In his opinion, the old lineages are far from dead. Just bullet points as an example. The 7 kingdoms were the King of the North. He says, well, you got enough Stark blood available between Jon, Sansa, and Arya, and Bran, if you want to throw that in the mix. I agree. The Starks, against all odds, have come through with the best claim for a future. That's, well, the non-Targaryen claim, anyway. Princess of Dorne, there's enough sand snakes who are related to House Martell available, and legitimizing bastards wouldn't be a new idea either. I agree with that. They're in Camp Dany. If Dany wants to legitimize any of those sand snakes as the rightful heir, Dorne has a tradition of having princesses rule. That, not a problem. King of the Rock, or the Westlands. Tyrion is a Lannister, or at least half a Lannister, if the Targaryen rumors prove to be true, and he is with Dany, so he will not go down with Cersei. This could be some sort of poetic justice, since he is the rightful heir to Castle Rock in the first place, with Jaime in the Kingsguard and Cersei being a woman wed to another king. All right, I think Tyrion could, I mean, he could father children, right?
Sure.
No reason the Lannister line has to end there. So far, so good. King of the Reach. Mace Tyrell left 2 sons, Loras' older brother Willis and Garland. Not sure if they're mentioned in a TV show, but in the Tyrells plan to wed Willis to Sansa before Tywin beat them to it and wed Sansa to Tyrion. This plot is in a show, I guess. However, if Loras was Mace's only son, he would never have been allowed to take the white. So here's where the books versus the TV differ. In the books, there are alternate kids, and Loras Tyrell does become one of the Kingsguard. In the show, that never happens. In fact, he's being wedded off to Cersei, and Sansa's being wedded off to Tyrion. So, and show Olenna absolutely establishes that her family's been destroyed, that they're like that her future's been robbed. If she had another son or another grandson, she would not be saying that. Yeah.
I guess somebody on Twitter sent me some images of someone who they claim is a granddaughter of Olenna.
Yeah.
Images from the show. I don't know if it's true or not. I have no concept of what this Tyrell house looks like at this point. But,
well, if it's just a picture and it's like someone trying to say this is someone from the book, And they got to be a named person.
Right.
And again, if Lady Olenna had a plan to keep her house going, I think she would say that in her negotiations with her frenemies here, and she didn't. So,
yeah.
I think that Tyrells are kaput, and there's no way around it. And the show,
could be.
Not the books, but the show for sure. King of the Islands and the Rivers. I would assume that it's the only king of the Iron. I assume that it's only king of the Iron Islands in the future. So they'll revert back to that. You know, the Iron Islands are ruling the Riverlands. Asha would make for a good queen of House Greyjoy, and Dany would surely like some more female regents in her realm. I'm fine with that. Asha in the book, Yara in the show.
Right.
King of the Mountains in the Vale. Since Littlefinger has his little fingers not only in the Vale, but also as Lord Paramount of the Trident and Lord of the Harrenhal, the Riverlands could go over to the Vale, but I don't see Littlefinger as king. I see Sansa as queen. She somehow wrestles the Vale from Littlefinger, and her being half a Tully should make for an additional claim to the Riverlands. The problem I have with that, combining the Vale and the Riverlands together, is, you know, when we're talking about Yara, she asked Dany, Dany asked her to stop the raping and reaving, and Yara said, well, that's our way of life, and Dany's like, no more, and she's like, okay, and we talked about, like, okay, if you're going to do that, the reason they started raping and reaving in the first place is they live on rocks that barely jut out of the surface of, and there's no real farmlands or anything like that. Mm-hmm. If you return the Riverlands to their ownership, well, there you go. Now they got a breadbasket to provide for their people.
Yeah.
If you give it to the Vale, what the hell? The Vale already can take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't think Littlefinger survives on the side of angels on this series.
I can't imagine.
He's killed too many good people to get away with this.
I agree.
If anything, I think Sansa's going to do him in.
She could. She certainly could. There might be a battle coming up between him and Jon, possibly, as well. You know, he didn't seem all too happy about King of the North stuff.
So the Stormlands could have a Storm Queen instead. So what about Daenerys Stormborn? I mean, yeah, but she... So if you... I don't know about, and this is his next paragraph, because I'm far from convinced of this scenario, but it's an easy example for the importance of the old lineages and a scenario which proves that these lineages are not on the verge of extinction. The weakest points in this game is that Daenerys would get much less than she hoped to conquer, while the others get the same or more land and titles than they ever had or hoped to possess. On the other hand, Dany never expected or planned for the White Walkers, so there's that. Perhaps this changes her mind about ruling all kingdoms from atop the Iron Throne. That's the biggest question in my mind, is that Dany truly wants to break the real wheel. God.
Mm-hmm.
If Dany wants to break the wheel, she has to have the authority to do so. And if she gives everyone their independence, then what the hell? There's no central army. There's no central government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be interesting if the... If, like, the Lord's Paramount became some kind of elected office that, you know, so it's like, a, you know, essentially they're governors, and then she's, like, the president, or she'd be, the reigning monarch, and then you'd have a prime minister or whatnot. But I can't see her just giving these kingdoms their rule back.
I broadly agree with the sentiment there that these, you know, great houses are not on the verge of extinction necessarily.
Right.
There are, I guess when you lay it all out like that, yeah, sure, there are people who can succeed, people who can continue those lines. I think the Lannisters have been honestly put one of the biggest dents in. The Starks have had a pretty big dent put in them.
Yeah.
I mean, there are still several children, but Jon isn't at this point a Stark.
He's
more a Targaryen than
And Bran's the only Stark. One that could potentially give male children, which is important in this world, and we don't know if he's paralyzed. Does that, you know, I know that paralyzed people, paraplegics in our world can have sex and father children, depending on how far down the spine they're injured, and also you can just pull the sperm right out of their nut.
And I don't think
you don't have that in Westeros.
Yeah, and I don't think Arya is in any shape to be a lady of anything at this point.
Sure.
She's on a killing spree. Where she ends up, I don't know, but right now, I don't see it for Arya. So it really feels like Sansa is kind of the last hope in a lot of ways for the Stark house.
Well, and the other thing, I think that there's some interesting parallels in that the Age of Heroes, like the 8,000-year period where, you know, the White Walkers were defeated and you had all that stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ancient, like the Lannisters took over from the Casterlys, like Land the Clever somehow stole their lands from him, like the myth says. And in the Reach, the Tyrells were the stewards of that land, and they got, I think during the War of Conquest, they were the people that ruled the lands originally were destroyed, and the King Aegon elevated them to Lord Paramount status. So it's not the first time that a time of upheaval would just completely upend some of these powerful houses.
Sure.
So,
like the Baratheons. Who's left in the fucking Baratheon house?
Well, and they're just an up-jumped off-start of the Targaryens in the first place. No one. As far as I, to answer your question, Gendry. He's out rowing somewhere.
Okay.
That is literally the last of the Baratheons that I'm aware of, because Cersei purged all the other bastards.
Right. None of those kids. I mean, those kids are all dead, and Renly's none of them were dead. Baratheons
dead.
Anyway.
Shireen's dead.
Yeah.
Robert's dead. All of the Lannister kids that weren't his kids anyway are dead. Like, there are no more Baratheons except for Gendry.
Yeah. So I don't think it's impossible that a lot of these houses are exterminated. The Tyrells, basically gone at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What does the Martell house look like at this point?
Well, they just have bastard daughter children.
Right. So we've already seen the extinction of a lot of them.
Yep.
Actually.
Yep. And you could, again, you could legitimize them, and they've got different rules as far as how they roll with the patriarchy down in Dorne anyway. But yeah, there's definitely already, I feel like some houses have probably gone back from the point of no return.
Mm-hmm.
Or gotten to the point, rather.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later. Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
David McSee said, I just listened to your podcast and want to talk a bit about Sam. Although I thought the library is neat to see and obviously visually stunning, I kept thinking to myself, why is this scene included in the finale? I'm sure y'all already know this, but Qyburn was definitely wearing the Hand of the Kingpin while I was drowning, or by crowning, Cersei. This means King's Landing will be in need of a new maester in Season 7. Wouldn't it be great if Sam gets sent to fill this job opening? It would give him an opportunity to gather intel as a mole until Jon and Dany arrive, and would also explain why the library scene was included in the finale. The potential for suspense next season would be off the charts, especially since the White Walker and Dany plots will be lacking all subtlety. The big flaw in your plan here, David, is that there's no way in hell they would send. Let's say if Sam is able to slam through his transfer, you know, his acolyte program into a maester,
yeah,
which is essentially at least as rigorous as a PhD degree in a real world.
Years.
There's no way that they would send a freshly minted maester to be the grand maester to the Seven Kingdoms.
Right.
There's just no
especially one
way.
Who's taken the black.
Yeah.
Like, he belongs a Castle Black.
Right.
Now,
it would be, like, I think one thing that's a possibility that might not even be interesting, because, again, I don't think that Sam's going to complete his training, personally, is that if he did, I don't know that it's a given that they would honor the Lord Commander's request to send them, hey, I want you to train this guy as a maester, and then send him back to us.
Well, it seemed like there was some line.
They would probably just send the maester to Castle Black, who would be the new maester for the Night's Watch, and then Sam would get trained and then sent somewhere else.
Wasn't there, I mean, he shows up at this place, and it seemed like there was already a plan for, you know, this guy to take over.
No, they were talking about I think that they just didn't know that Jor was dead and so was Aemon.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, there was a plan for someone to already take over.
Probably.
So, like, they have people in those locations ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
So it seems like there is an assignment there.
Yeah.
Jor is going to be the next maester up there. Oh, he's not? Okay, Sam's replacing
him.
Well,
Jor was the old bear. He was the Lord Commander.
Right.
They're talking about him.
Yeah, I know who that is.
Oh, okay.
But he was in line to be the next maester, yeah?
No, he was the Lord Commander. Are you sure you understand? Because
Jor's the Lord Commander. Okay, maybe I didn't
they
understand
They looked up the record because he said he looked up and saw that his letter was signed
John
by Jon Snow.
Okay.
And he's like, what? This is most irregular.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes much more sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I always thought that was weird in the books. Like, yeah, you can do that. And maybe they'll train Sam, but why the hell would they, you know, are you just going to not have a maester until Sam completes his training? I don't think that would sit well at the Citadel at all.
Here's another option.
Because having their maesters gives them power and influence and connection. And
sure.
They're just not going to leave that position vacant for X amount of years.
How about this? Castle Black doesn't exist by the time Sam's ready to become a maester.
That's highly possible as well.
Okay. And therefore, like, if he discovers some information and, you know, he hits a grand slam during his training, maybe they do send him to King's Landing?
As Grand Maester? I just don't, like, is there literally no other qualified?
Like, if he lights this fucking glass candle and he has, like, all of this knowledge.
Oh, if he goes, like, full on Harry Potter, the Chosen One?
I don't know what that reference is, but
you know,
whatever. Sure, if he's the Luke Skywalker of this situation, yeah, maybe they send him in.
Could be, I suppose. If he blows up the Death Star.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like that will be...
If he makes the jump from building to building.
Yeah, like, say if he's instrumental in taking down the White Walkers, that almost feels like a post-A Song of Ice and Fire plotline. you know,
going to King's Landing.
Yeah, like he's maybe you find out in the last few, because there was someone floating that theory that maybe Sam's the narrator of the story.
Right.
So like that would be an interesting epilogue, that like Sam is an old man, he's now become the Grand Maester, and you know, Danny's an old woman, and John's, and he's writing the last bits of record, and that would be kind of a cool. But yeah, like I just don't see him being Grand Maester under any kind of emergency circumstances. That, like I said, you know, if he single-handedly takes out the White Walkers, there's instrumental, fine, but then that's, again, you're in epilogue territory, not like, hey, and this has happened in the middle of book six kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's go on to Shield D. The battle with the White Walkers is coming, and I'm very excited to see it. However, before we get there, I want to see the Night's King and his buddies are more than just a bunch of orcs hell-bent on killing all of humanity. Gurm has developed his characters to show many shades of their personality. No one is either totally good nor evil. I would like to see that kind of complexity from the Northern threat. If their purpose is just kill, that would be very disappointing. And with only 13 episodes left, I'm not sure if there's enough time to explore the Night's King story.
Ned Stark, the ultimate good, versus the White Walkers, the ultimate bad. Because Ned Stark, can you say a bad thing about that guy? Is there anything bad to be said about Ned Stark?
He unjustly judged Jaime Lannister.
He lied to his wife about Jon Snow.
He lied to his wife about Jon Snow.
Okay, fair.
Other than that, got himself killed. No, so, but what are you talking about? He's dead. How would
I know, but she's... Is it she who wrote it?
Yeah, Sheel? I don't know if that's a
Sheel, good. Okay. Can't tell. Can't gender your name. Sorry.
Sheel. It's a Hebrew word meaning she-god. So.
Okay. So they're coming up with, you know, this idea that no characters are black or white.
Right.
They're all gray.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to say
Ned Stark were their the characters of good.
Yeah.
Rob, honestly, his
Bran,
his worst thing is his, he let his personal.
I guess Bran's kind of bad. That Hodor thing wasn't great.
It wasn't great. But Rob Stark was like his biggest flaw was his personal nobility,
which I don't think is inherently bad.
No, like he got a girl with child, you know, a side piece, and screwed up his marriage alliance. That's just being young, dumb, horny teenager. That's not necessarily evil.
No, I don't think there's anything evil about that. I mean,
yeah, especially if you're trying to dodge a Frey wife.
Right.
Any and all measures are authorized in that kind of emergency maneuver.
But I do largely agree with that sentiment that the characters are more than just one shade.
Yeah. Now, and that's the other thing, is like a lot of people speculated, you know, the White Walkers have to be, there's got to be something to it. There's got to be something that Men has screwed up and they're actually some kind of benevolent balancing force or something, because else, you know, one of the criticisms, Gurm, put the Jurt, the J.R.R. Tolkien, was that it's too black and white. You've got Sauron, who is just essentially a purely satanic, wants power for its sake, is jealous of the one true God, is jealous of the beautiful creations of Eru, and he's just wanting to fuck shit up and watch the world burn. And orcs are the same way. They just are all into suffering and destruction, and you know, they're twisted and evil versions made in a mockery of elves and men. Like, all this stuff. So, if the White Walkers are just the evil baddies of the universe, I guess my question is establishing them as being weapons that are out of control by the Children of the Forest, is that already giving them enough shade?
I think it is for me.
I said this much a few weeks ago, but now I've been thinking about it, and I'm like, that's a very mechanistic thing. It's not a very moral thing.
Well, it says more about the people involved in their creation and less about the White Walkers themselves.
Right.
Now, I do think there is an intelligence behind them, obviously.
Yes.
So that would imply, you know, motivations, and like they don't necessarily have to be all bad. And I guess I would like it if there was something more to that, but I guess I also don't need it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's been enough with this idea that they are kind of a creation that got out of hand.
I do think some of the more outlandish fan theories, I wouldn't even say outlandish, but ones that people have been leaning towards, like the Night's King is an ancient Stark, or you know, the fact that they're marching south because there's some ancient treaty that mankind is no longer, or they're pissed off because there's no longer a Stark in Winterfell. That feels like it's less and less likely now that we're only 13 episodes away from the end of the series.
Yeah.
Kara A said, before we saw that final loaded stare between Jaime and Cersei as she sat upon the Iron Throne, they each baldly told us what we need to know about their motivations and quality of their side of the love story, as each confessed to their prisoner. Jaime to Edmure Tully says, the things we do for love. I love Cersei. You can laugh at that if you want. Sneer, it doesn't matter. She needs me. You don't matter to me. Your son doesn't matter to me. The people in the castle don't matter to me. Only Cersei. Cersei to Septa Anella, I do things because they feel good. I fuck my brother because it feels good to feel him inside me. Me thinks come season 7 that that's not going to be enough for the Valonqar. Again, Valonqar, High Valyrian word meaning little brother. Jaime, Jaime, little known fact, was born slightly after. He popped out the chute seconds after Cersei did, holding her heel. So that technically makes him a Valonqar. It seems to me it's becoming more and more likely that Jaime is going to be the one that does her in, is going to fulfill that part of the prophecy.
Seems like it.
Now, again, this part of the prophecy is not in the show. It's only a book only thing, and it's such a cool part that if it was a big deal, I feel like they could have easily worked this Valonqar thing in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, they explained Valor Morghulis to us over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, you could have Missandei joking with Grey Worm and she's calling him Valonqar, and Danny's like, what does that mean? Oh, it's just a word for little brother. That's how I view him.
There are, yeah, thousands of ways.
Grey Worm cries because
it.
He really loves her. But I don't know. Why didn't they have the Valonqar part of the prophecy, Jim? It's another sentence. It's another fucking sentence.
Because it's a red herring put in there by George Martin. I don't know. I really don't know. It seems like it's a valuable piece of information. You know, we talked a little bit about it last week, I think, with this Valonqar thing, how maybe it was too much information that they didn't want to give away.
But there was so many
for the show.
There's so many little brothers at play that you could. But now there's like less and less. Like, we just scratched Tommen off the list. He cannot beat a Valonqar.
Yeah.
Unless the books go down radically different from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Jaime's still on the table. Tyrion's on the table. The Hound is on the table. But of all those, I feel like Jaime is the one that's actually going to have the most heft and weight. And that I also really liked what Kara pointed out here, because this is a lot closer to where things are in the books, where Jaime is, you know, this literally is the only woman I've ever loved.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Cersei, as soon as Jaime had to move because, you know, he was called out to war, as soon as he moved by her side, she was looking for other people to warm her bed. And not just other people, like, she was fucking Kettlebacks and Lancels and Moonboy, for all I know. Like, she was plowing her way through King's Landing.
Because it feels good.
It feels good. It feels good. It helped her cement some dynasties not dynasties. She wanted to secure power against Tyrion, and it kind of blew up in her face. But yeah, definitely. Like, you get in mind that maybe Cersei's literally the only person Jaime slept with.
Right. We didn't talk a ton. By the time we got to that scene in the recap, we were way into the podcast and just kind of moving on. Maybe now would be a good time to talk a little bit more about that look, because it says so much.
Okay.
Not only does it say, Cersei's gone a little power mad, but it also tells you Jaime knows exactly what's happened here, right? Like, she doesn't get crowned unless Tommen is out of the picture.
Yes.
Her pretty dour look, I think, says a lot about how that happened.
Yeah.
And that maybe she caused it, especially when combined with this burning sept. Like,
well, not only that, but maybe
it's so economically told here, this part of the story.
Well, and the other thing we didn't mention about, like, grist for the Cersei intended Tommen to die is maybe he was dead to her as soon as he announced that trial by combat's been banned.
Maybe. I still don't think it lines up with sending Gregor to keep him there, but...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's the damn truth.
That's the damning piece of information for that theory.
Yeah.
But yeah,
maybe Cersei is really... It's a really dark interpretation. She wanted him to see.
Yeah.
Like, this is what it takes to be Lannister's son, and you're either going to hate me forever and jump out the window, or you're going to get on board.
Maybe.
Nah, I don't believe that myself. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
Mm.
But yeah, I feel like that they're really setting us up to be real hurt and betrayal for Jamie. And you throw in all, again, everything he lost personally, and all of his honor and his position and his position as a knight, which is something that he had always wanted and looked up to those that he'd served with, to keep something like this from happening. And here his lover not only doesn't love him that much, but is pulling this shit. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Johnny said, I'd like to hear your take on the release of the next book. I was wondering if maybe Gurm is holding off publishing as a stylistic choice.
Oh, God.
Along the lines that, except for a few outliers, all book readers are show watchers, but not all show watchers are book readers. Possibly the best medium to deliver the story and keep the integrity of its twist is the medium that everyone subscribes to, i.e. television. Also, with the lack of book canon, people are going crazy with theories. All good for the publicity of the book and the TV show, or it just is what it is, a writer enjoying the whooshing sounds deadlines make as they fly by their heads. I feel like the latter. I feel like George is a guy who likes life and is living large now, and that has led to a direct decline in his productivity.
Sure, I could see that.
He's got the money and time and influence to indulge in his interests and kind of flex a little bit of political power in the literary world. And he's doing that instead of sitting in by a keyboard or a word processor and processing words.
Yeah.
Because the other is like, I mean, you're right. Like, if you want to preserve the maximum amount of spoilers and surprise, you do the TV show first and the books. Because the book audience is a tenth, if not a hundredth, of the show audience, and they have proven in the past more than willing to fuck shit up. Whereas sure. The TV, everyone, you know, if you don't want to be spoiled, then sit down at 9 p.m. your time zone and fucking watch Game of Thrones. That's it. That's all you got to do. Yeah. Whereas the book, you have to buy it day one and read it before anybody else does, and that's the only way you can be spoiler-free.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of merit to that, but man, do you think he has any pride as a creator?
I have no room to speculate here. Mm. Like, I have no insight that anyone else doesn't have. So you're barking up the wrong tree here.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems hard for me to believe that he would consciously ink this deal with the think of, oh, maybe it'll overtake me and then I don't have to worry about spoilers for TV no more.
The one thing I can say about it is if it were me mm-hmm. and I were in his position, I would be disappointed in myself.
Yes.
Honestly, for having kind of made a pact with the viewers or rather the book readers that I'm going to get this out for you before the show comes along and outdoes me mm-hmm. and then not living up to that.
Yeah.
I personally would be disappointed in myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's probably, just judging from the tenor of his web posts and kind of his demeanor in public interviews, this does seem like it's pretty a heavy toll on him. I don't think he would do it just for, as you say, stylistic purposes, but who knows what lurks in the minds of Gurms. Elisa W. says, hey guys, really enjoying your podcast. You keep mentioning Daenerys marrying someone and having children, but didn't she become sterile after having that baby in season one? Didn't that old Dothraki lady say that she wouldn't be able to have any more children, or did something else happen where she'll be able to again? All right, so you're right. There is this statement that she made about having children where she said that your cow will return and your womb will quicken when the sun rises in the west and sets in the east, when the mountains, when the seas blow away and the mountains are toppled, etc. Now, in the books, there's a lot of people that are seeing some things that are indicating maybe this is coming true.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the mountain toppled, the seas blowing away when Dany goes and rides off from the Great Pit, the Great Fighting Pit, to the Dothraki Sea, that it's dying because of the winter. So that's a sea that's drying up. And the sun rising in the west and setting the east could represent the Quentin Martell marriage proposal that was sent from Dorne, which is in the west, and it comes over to Essos, or I'm sorry, yeah, in the west, and it traveled east, and then set on fire, literally was ended. All those conditions were fulfilled of this prophecy/curse. And then indeed, there's a lot of stuff in when Dany's out in the wilderness where she is bleeding again. She's gotten her period back, indicating that maybe this is actually not just a clever poetic way of saying never, bitch, it's never going to happen, to where is an unwitting prophecy. Very few of that stuff makes it in the show. Like Quentin, not there. The mountain did kind of topple, but they didn't make anything about the Dothraki Sea blowing away, and they established a Dothraki Sea as a thing in the first season. So
how would you do that if you were tasked with showing that that prophecy had been coming true over the course of six seasons? How would you do that in the show?
Well, the mountain falling, I think that's pretty much on the face of it. The sun.
Do you do it just with the previously on and then move on from there?
Well, I wouldn't even do previously on. I just put this stuff in the show. Like, I would have instead of having Varys come to Dorne, maybe what happens is in the previous season, you just speed up the Dorne thing to where Elaria kills off Doran and then sails as you show her sail in a ship from. And if you really wanted to make the point, you could have the sunset behind her and she's sailing east and she's got the big Dornish sun spear on her sail. And you would have Dany, when she gets to Dothraki Sea, it's all brown. And like, she could maybe even say it's chilly and winter's coming or something, that enough to where people could start getting those book speculations. But now it's like, I feel like it's too late.
That's what I was wondering. Like, I guess you could do it with a Cersei-esque sort of prophecy.
Right.
Prophecy flashback.
You could. But, I mean, the witch did say as much to Dany. And the other thing is, I guess as a show watcher, you maybe you don't put credence in that because she did have children, her dragon children. Maybe that's all the children. I don't know. Like, Tyrion mentioned that that she will be loved again, and certainly part of the many prophecies that Dany was propounded with in the House of the Undying was that she'd be the bride to several grooms. But yeah, I don't know. There's no,
a dragon is not going to carry on your legacy, lineage. So, yeah. Like, as much as people say, oh, the dragons are her children. Well, fine. But when it comes to lineage, that doesn't matter.
How smart are these dragons? Maybe they're going to sit on the Iron Throne. Philosopher King Dragon.
Do dragons have a human horn? Like, can they blow a horn and take control of humans?
Well, the male half of the species has a horn that they're easily controlled by. And if you blow it, they'll do pretty much anything you want. So okay. There's that, if you want to go.
I think you might be mixing metaphors here or something.
Okay, Dan from Manchester has the final question for this final spoiler edition, separate spoiler cast. I was wondering what Jim will do if Winds of Winter comes out during the off season. If the book has plot developments ahead of the season 6, will Jim participate in a spoiler podcast next year, or will you abstain, or will you perhaps read the book?
No, I'm in on the spoiler cast now.
I feel like it's the Rubicon has been crossed. You can't unlearn what you've learned.
I learned a lot about stuff that hadn't happened yet in the show from sitting in on the spoiler cast early on in this season, honestly. So I don't think I would avoid spoilers anymore.
The only problem is if the book does come out in the off season, one of the fun things was I was able to entertain viewer theories about stuff that I had knowledge of, but you didn't, and just, you know, roll with the mild interesting, and you could actually comment on. You know, I could recuse myself and just let you think of what that theory, you know, how that theory sounds to you. But, you know, I don't think we can really ever do that again.
No, I think, it has fundamentally changed our coverage, me being on the spoiler cast.
Yeah.
And I think going forward, we will keep it as is.
Yeah. So would you have interest in like picking up an audiobook?
I'd be so
would
lost.
You just want me to like feed you like a baby bird and like just regurgitate in your mouth the books? Or
yeah, I mean, I think we do exactly what we did this season. Like as the things come up and are necessary to talk about, you can recap.
You know what would be fun is just to do a standalone podcast. Like, okay, it's been a week, Aaron's finished a book, he's now going to tell in a 2-hour podcast the events of the book to Jim.
Okay.
And just speculate on what that will mean for the show and how things are different, what things are like that. That would be kind of cool. That'd be really cool. Because it'll take, I mean, obviously there'll be some things, like I would be surprised if we don't get confirmation of the R plus L equals J.
Yeah.
And I'd be surprised if John doesn't come back to life and take over Winterfell. But, you know, to really get the real hardcore spoiler tinfoil stuff ginning up, that might take a while. That might take a couple months. And in fact, that's the other thing is, even if a book comes out, how many more spoiler, how many more tinfoil theories can you have this close to the end?
Yeah.
Like, maybe a few, but once you get A Dream of Spring, and like, assuming that's the final book, there is no more tinfoil. It's done. There's no more story.
Yeah, the spoiler cast is only going to last one more season, right?
If that.
Like, season 8 is not going to have
like,
one.
Honestly, I'm thinking that this might be the last year for the spoiler podcast, because there's only the one fucking thing from the Citadel, again, unless the Winds of Winter comes out.
Yeah.
Winds of Winter comes out, Katie barred the door. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't come out, then I don't, I think we might have a spoiler section of the main podcast where we just talk about, like, you know, what's going on with Sam at a Citadel, and oh, look, there's a cross-dressing Sand Snake in the background, and does that acolyte have a little bit too much eyeshadow? I don't know. there'll be that kind of stuff, but this might be the end of an era. Like, there was no... I had some suggestions of tinfoil I could have done, but nothing like, you know, like, to me, something's got to be as interesting or funny or as the stuff that we've done before. And we've done like 20 of these things. And, you know, 5 years out from the last book, the tinfoil that's coming out now is more and more kind of desperate and reaching.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a cool idea, though, kind of summing up parts of the book and doing, like, I don't know, chapter by chapter, but maybe like storyline.
I literally think
line.
Just like a, just a conversation, like essentially what we would have if we weren't recording a podcast, where I would just tell you what happened and
right, but I'd like to make, I don't know if you want to do that as a one shot or if you'd rather do it over the course of several weeks. Take one storyline, like, let's discuss Arya this episode, or let's discuss Sansa and Jon.
That would be a good way, because you could, all the books are subtitled, the chapters of the books are subtitled with their POV, like it's Arya.
So you do like four chapters.
Yeah, it's like, so there, and I think you probably, like, Arya might be meaty enough, but there's a lot of POVs, like maybe there's a Melisandre POV, because she had two chapters, I think, for the first time in Dance.
Okay.
Like, if Melisandre has two chapters, like, well...
Combine it with a couple of
maybe you
of
need,
other
like,
small
the, it's kind of like in Gilligan's Island, where you had the Skipper and Gilligan... And then
Ginger too.
Then you got to, and the rest, like the first couple seasons, they went through everybody. Yeah, and the Professor and Marianne and all them. But, but then it's like it was essentially the main three or four stars, and then and the rest. So like, yeah, we can have like the Arya, the Jon, the Sansa, and then the rest. Like, you know, once you peter out, the rest.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean. That's something we could do in a spoiler section if you want to do for this Tuesday wrap-up podcast. If you want to talk about what you're hoping to see in the Winds of Winter, because my number one thing at this point, now that we've had this season, is what's going on with Brienne. What is her arc going to be? I think that's actually the thing I'm most number one interested in. If you just eliminate, like, obviously how the War of the White Walkers goes and all that stuff, like
who becomes the leader of Westeros?
Yeah, like what is the deal? What is the deal with Brienne?
Yeah,
like how is her arc with Jaime going to conclude? And I don't, you know, I'm a big shipper of them. I don't need that to happen, but they do have unfinished business. In the book, it's a lot more dark and menacing, and you know. If we don't get a book and we get next year, I have a feeling that there's going to be some bad stuff between her and Arya and Melisandre, and it's going to pit them at odds with Jaime. So, anyway, that's it. That's for Final Spoiler Edition. If you've got some more thoughts you want to send in for a small spoiler rider that we'll be putting on at the end of next week's main wrap-up podcast, you can still send it in to GameOfThrones@baldmove.com and on forums, forums.baldmove.com. Until then, we'll see you later.